Hello, and welcome to the Missionary Disciple Podcast by Catholic Christian Outreach. The aim of this podcast is to inspire, equip, and challenge you, our listener, to be an active and effective evangelist. I'm your host, Gerhard, a missionary here with CCO. Today's episode is on intentional accompaniment with Ian Anderson and Michael Hall. And we have a conversation on how important relationships and intentional accompaniment is to being an effective missionary disciple. Before we get started, if you have any questions about evangelization, please email us at podcast@cco.ca and we'll answer them in a future episode. All right, let's dive in. All righty, we're live. Cool. So, how you guys doing?
Good.
Pretty good, thanks.
Michael, you've been a missionary for how long?
Just finished 15 years now.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
15 years.
It's been quite the ride.
Yeah, I can imagine. And Ian, yourself?
This will be working on my ninth year here. Okay. Been all over Western Canada. Soon to be moving to Ottawa. So this is, you caught me in the last couple weeks in Alberta here.
Yeah. Why are you moving to Ottawa?
I'll be joining the head office as the manager of the training department. Looking forward to that. It's a big role. Like, it's exciting for me to be a bigger part of equipping our missionaries for the renewal of the world and safeguarding our materials. You know, like what God has entrusted to us, the insights and opportunities to further the church's mission. Yeah.
Cool. And so, Michael, what is your role with CCO?
Well, just starting a new role that we just created. The official title is the Senior Content Development Specialist. But basically, I've been managing different departments in that for about 10 years. But we really wanted to step into focusing on using my passions and my recent education I've been doing to try to create new stuff for CCO, creating new materials, revamping the current materials. You know, Ian was talking about safeguarding the materials we have. I want to help those materials continue to grow. We have some of the, if not the greatest stuff out there in terms of being able to proclaim the gospel in a clear and simple way and introduce people into the life of discipleship, of walking towards the Lord. Mm-hmm. But just because it's awesome doesn't mean it can't be better. And so we want to continue to refine those. We want to look towards new stuff that we're going to create, you know, new faith studies, you know, writing books, writing different materials. So that's what I'm going to be putting my time towards, is really trying to help drive forward our capacity, both in terms of our written materials and in terms of just developing our curriculum as well. Just trying to continue to move our staff, our missionaries, towards being fully trained and fully formed.
You know, Gerhard, I was going to joke that, you know, it was maybe up for debate whether the part of Michael's title there should be emphasized either senior or specialist. But given his answer there, I think it's pretty clear it's the specialist.
Yes, very much the specialist. Michael, you mentioned the concept of discipleship, and that's something we've talked that over the past few years we've really talked a lot about within the movement in terms of discipling those that we work with and leading them to Christ. Starting about 2 years ago, we started to have conversations moving the conversation away from discipleship towards what we call intentional accompaniment. Mm-hmm. First off, what do we mean when we talk about discipleship? And then what caused us to start moving off of using the phrase discipleship into it towards intentional accompaniment?
Yeah, great question. So I think a couple of things there. First, it's more about reframing the use of the word discipleship. And I think putting it into its proper context rather than moving away from the use of it. Discipleship is a very important word. It's a word that goes back to the term disciple is used in the New Testament of describing the followers of Jesus. And it's been used and it's continued to use right up to this day. You read through any of the documents of the church, the catechism. There's regular reference to Christians should be referred to, or one of the terms you can use is a disciple of Christ. One of the things you don't see in church documents, in the catechism, in the scriptures, is using discipleship to describe a ministry you do with someone else, which is kind of the way, it's another way that word is being used more, I don't know exactly when it would have come into more common usage, but it's becoming more and more common now within the church to describe the ministry you do with somebody else as discipling or engaging in discipleship with someone else. And I know for our staff, we found that there's maybe a bit of confusion that comes with that, because we're using the same term to describe two different things. So the way that it's traditionally been used is discipleship describes your walk with the Lord, that each of us is a disciple. And so your discipleship is essentially following Jesus. If you want to really just break it down to the most simple terms, it's me following Jesus, you following Jesus, and everyone who is a disciple of Jesus follows him. And so that's our discipleship. And if you look again in documents of the church, that's really where the term discipleship gets used. And what we within CCO, and I'm seeing it kind of more and more within the wider scope of the church, we're more and more using it to also describe when I minister to someone else and I take them under my wing and try to help them grow as a disciple of Christ. And part of the confusion that we were finding is that when we refer to it as discipleship, then we start referring to people as, well, my disciple, but we don't want people to be our disciples. As much as we should be giving a great witness of life, you know, and hopefully our life is worthy of some degree of imitation, the reality is we want them to be disciples of Jesus. And so in us trying to move away from using the term discipleship as how we minister to other people, we're trying to shift that vision to be that you are a disciple of Christ and I will accompany you on your journey towards the Lord. And so that's where the term accompaniment really comes in, which Pope Francis has popularized. You saw it come up in Evangelii Gaudium in his encyclical on evangelization, on the joy of the gospel. And then it's becoming more and more common usage within the church, is that we speak of our ministry with other people as an accompaniment, that we walk alongside them. And then we inserted the term intentional because we wanted to make sure it was very clear that accompaniment should have a purpose and it should have a plan to it. That you know the destination you want to bring people, which is towards Christ and moving them always towards Jesus. And that we don't just do that by kind of wandering beside somebody, but that we actually have a plan of how I want to accompany you. That I know, you know, the question we try to ask ourselves is, what's the next great step that someone can take in their faith? And how do I help them take that step?
Okay, cool. So you both have been working in fleshing out this idea of intentional accompaniment and taking it from a concept or the idea of I'm just going to accompany someone or walk alongside them into more of a formal process and with more of a framework and a structure around it. Ian, would you be able to explain to us that framework and that structure and how that fits into our work as evangelists out in the world?
Sure. So the framework, the structure kind of came into being in a pretty neat way. Like we were entering into this conversation a little bit more deeply, realizing that this idea of accompaniments and one of the lines from Pope Francis as well, where he talks about taking off your sandals in the sacred ground of the other, you know, really just recognizing the sacred space of this person's journey towards the Lord and how we have an opportunity to participate in that. And that's an incredible gift. We realized we were sharing about kind of our thoughts to this point with the rest of the CCO staff, and three different people on staff kind of drew an image of what this idea we were sharing might look like if we were to put it into a visual. What kind of came out was basically an hourglass shape, and the idea being that the bottom part of the hourglass, as we're journeying upwards towards completion in Christ, the bottom part of the hourglass is all leading to a point, and that point is a decision for Christ, conversion, right? A decision to become a disciple. So everything kind of below that point, the pinch point in the hourglass, is a person's journey towards that decision point. And so there's a lot of work that can be done, walking with people, witnessing to them, helping them understand the truths of the gospel, you know, step by step, as appropriate to where they're at. And we'll get in more into how you can recognize that in future podcasts. And then from that decision, from that pinch point upwards, expanding out into the fullness of the Catholic faith, in particular with our understanding kind of as our niche specialization, because we don't purport to give everything and anything that you could possibly learn about the faith. But we really help people focus on the two key areas of holiness and mission to grow in those, as Pope Benedict called it, the two-sided coin, you know, of both holiness, which impels us to mission, and mission, which drives us to greater holiness. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Neat. So there's very much a process in place. And yeah, I remember that time where you first talked about it at the staff gathering with all of us there. There's definitely a lot of energy in the room and a lot of excitement. I think with all the staff, we really felt that there was a wonderful opportunity to express in words something that we were all living out. We were all having an experience, but to be able to use it in words that fully reveal a greater truth of what we do. I think a lot of us had, you know, discipleship was, yes, it describes that I'm a disciple of Christ, but I'm not actually discipling, like no one's my disciples. It was really exciting, particularly as someone with a marketing background, to, you know, where marketing is always talking about funnels, and like there's a constant evolution in terms of how do we attract people to the business, take them from awareness of who we are all the way to I'm buying something. And it's interesting, like in the business world, there seems to be a parallel in terms of what we're going through from an evangelical or spiritual growth standpoint, where from what I've seen, there's a great emphasis on customer success and how do you turn someone from a customer to a brand evangelist. What we're doing is we're turning someone into a real evangelist. And it's interesting to see that there's a parallel happening here. Something that I've seen that's triggered at the back of my mind.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that, like, I've noticed as well. And I know this is maybe a bit of an aside, but it's kind of come full circle in a way. If you look at a lot of business literature, and especially in the last little while, the principles being talked about are increasingly Christian in their mm-hmm. character. There's a lot about servant leadership. There's a lot about humility that's becoming more popular in mainstream business approaches. And I think if you scratch below the surface, a lot of business experts also happen to be faithful Christians. So there's probably part of the reason for that, but it's also kind of coming full circle. Like some of those things are helping us to evangelize more effectively as well. So kind of from Christian principles to the business world and back.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see these in a way, almost an unaware re-Christianization of the business world, but from there into like just a re-Christianization of our society. We've swung really far one direction to the place where I think any semi-practicing Catholic or Christian would look at the world today and say, something's a little broken here. Just start to see people coming back to Christianity on their own, not necessarily through Christ. And our work, we're just cutting to the heart of the matter. And it's like, yeah, you can go the roundabout route. You might get to the end destination in about 100 years, but you know, let's do it faster.
Yeah, let's do the fast track.
Yeah. So either just tell me about some of the conversations you've been having as you've been flushing out this idea of intentional accompaniment. As you both mentioned, it's something that we have a lot of experience with and we're coming to a greater and deeper understanding. And it's something that we really feel like in a way we're leaders with this vision, at least within the church, as far as we're aware of. What have been some of the conversations like between the two of you as you start to develop this idea and really try to listen to, okay, what's the Lord trying to tell us, but also, you know, one ear to the Lord, but another ear or eye to the world and what's practically happening out there.
Well, I'll just maybe start with a quick comment and then Michael's great with the historical context of ideas and conversations. It's one of his strengths. So I'm sure he'll be able to fill in a lot of gaps here. I just wanted to also throw in there, like the work that we've done in the last couple of years is definitely standing on the shoulders of the experience and thought of a lot of people who have gone before us. In a particular way, I just wanted to shout out right here to Megan Turland, who is part of a lot of those initial conversations. We're really fleshing out this idea of accompaniment and its distinction from discipleship. She had a ton of beautiful insights that really helped shape the vision of what we're doing here. Pretty sure it was her actually that came up with, I didn't mention this before, but you have the hourglass and kind of, that's the person's journey, you could say. Like, it's describing that person, whoever it may be. It could be describing my journey, could be describing, you know, somebody that I'm accompanying, it could be describing their journey towards the Lord. On the outside of that is the opportunity that we have as accompaniers to witness, proclaim, and multiply. So these are the modes of action that we can kind of employ to help a person grow. And it's very, you know, like, we can flesh those out in a lot more detail as well. But that's the basic idea, that initially you're mostly just witnessing to a person by your life, by your friendship with them. The love that you show tells them about the love of Christ, ultimately leading to a clear proclamation of the gospel. And then from there, multiplying the attitudes, skills, and knowledge of an evangelist, multiplying missionary, as we like to say, you know, into that person.
I think if we go back to, like, you know, where did this all start? And that, I mean, for me, it started with a conversation with Andre Renier, and we were at a conference together, and I didn't intend to bring it up, but it's just been something I've been mulling over, this idea of, like, maybe this word discipleship is actually causing more confusion than help for our staff. And I kind of brought it up with trepidation because it's been something we've been, you know, it's been a foundational part of our ministry, you know, the ministry of what we call discipleship, you know, since the beginning of CCO. And it was a concept we kind of brought over from our original roots, going back into the training that Andre and Angel received as students through groups like Campus Crusade for Christ, now Power to Change in Canada, through InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and different groups like that. And I remember Andre immediately was the one who pointed me towards what Francis had written about accompaniment. He's actually that, what you're saying actually makes sense. And so that kind of started the ball rolling, essentially. It was just, as usual in CCO, things started with a conversation with Andre. And then things start going from there, right? And, you know, again, if we want to throw a shout out, I mean, it's Andre and Angel who really have driven home the principles that this is formed on, that the intentional accompaniment is formed on. Yeah, just the importance of the, you know, looking at each individual person, and as valued as that sacred space with each person, you know, we would determine one person at a time, and but having a heart for the world, that we can change the world through this one person, which is really your hope in intentional accompaniment, is that you want to be able to build, as Ian said, a multiplying missionary, you know, or now the term that's really been popularized in the church right now, again, another Francis term, is missionary disciple. Yeah. And I mean, conversations just have continued to flow through there. I think one of the big conversations that I found really helpful in fleshing this out is we've talked a fair amount about failures that we've had over the years with CCO. I mean, as any ministry, you're going to have failures along the way. And one of the things that we've seen is that, and it's feedback that we've received from many of our alumni, is that they weren't sure what to do, in a sense, once they left campus. And the person who had been discipling them, or now we'd say accompanying them along the way, they had such an attachment to that particular person that they were being discipled by. They'd even think of themselves as a disciple of so-and-so, you know, fill in the name of your missionary here. But what we've talked about, we've been thinking about, is just the more we identify ourselves with an individual, you know, a company or a discipler, or whatever term you use in that. It's always interesting to try to navigate, because we used to always call it discipler, but, you know, anyway, the more we need them to identify with Christ, we need them to look at Jesus as the one who's the discipler, if you will. He is the master they are following, and we're there to help them along the way, but we are certainly not the masters. And we don't want them to really be disciples of us. And when they understand, if we can understand, or we can help people understand that their discipleship is to Jesus first and foremost. And yes, you know, one of us is there to help them. We can be very influential, and we should be very influential in the lives of others. But if they can understand their discipleship is to Christ, then when they leave our campuses or whatever ministry context you find yourself in, if they leave that ministry, they don't have to feel abandoned if you know, you don't have the same level of contact anymore because their discipleship is with the Lord. And so what you've been teaching them to do is to follow Jesus. And you can do that anywhere. You don't need, I mean, you could even do that on your own. Of course, we should be doing it within the context of the church, and it's important to have people around us. But if you found yourself alone on a desert island with nobody else around, you could still follow Jesus and you could still be connected to him and you could still be praying and all that. Again, of course, I'm not suggesting, you know, to be outside the church or anything like that. But what I'm suggesting here is that the relationship should be an individual who follows Christ. And everything that goes along with that, then it doesn't necessarily get attached to an individual person who's helping you along the way. And I think that's one of the things that just a subtle shift in language can help, is that we are always saying, and not, of course, not that our staff weren't doing this before or that people who are using the term discipleship aren't doing that, but just putting the emphasis on, I'm pointing you to Christ and I'm walking with you on your journey, but you're the one who's walking towards Christ. I'm doing that too. And part of my discipleship with the Lord as an individual is to evangelize because I'm a missionary disciple. And so it is part of my call as a disciple to be with you and to help you grow towards Christ and to proclaim the gospel to people and, you know, to witness to those who've never heard, to proclaim the gospel to those who are prepared to hear it and to help those who have experienced conversion and made a decision for Christ to be able to multiply through them and make more and more missionary disciples who can make missionary disciples. So I think those are some of the neat conversations we've had around it.
Yeah. That, as you were speaking, one thing that really struck me is when you mentioned that we're pointing people to Christ and we're not pointing people to us, or we're not pointing people to another individual or the, let's say, the institution of the church. Not to say that, not to dismiss the importance of the church as the bride of Christ, but what struck me when you mentioned that is that in many ways, this idea of accompanying someone and having them be a disciple of Christ really seems to cut through, I think, a lot of the struggle that we have in the church right now. And in ways with the scandal that's happened, there's a lot of people that are angry with the church, and rightfully so, for the terrible things that have happened. But I think as good Catholics and good Christians, we need ultimately, through our words and actions, but we need to always point them to Christ, that we're following him and our eyes need to be focused on him and not focused. We're not following, or we're not a disciple of our bishop. He's our leader. He's meant to lead us to Christ and take care of our spiritual well-being, but we need to be focused on Christ. So within that, it really makes me think that there's that shift of perspective, that shift of focus can really help bring people to Christ and keep people focused on the proper end goal and not get lost or caught up with other things that are happening.
Yeah.
And if I can share a story there.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
When the scandal was real, just breaking back in August in the summer, when it was really kind of, you know, hitting the airwaves and everything was really coming out into the open. I mean, that rocked all of us. We were all, even for the most faithful Catholic, it was just so devastating to hear the extent of what was happening within the church and to hear the infighting in the church of, you know, we start seeing the finger pointing and the, you know, trying to see who, and it was devastating. And I remember being in Mass that weekend, you know, on Sunday Mass, and the readings, and I can't remember them all off the top of my head now. I believe though it was the weekend, and the Old Testament reading was from Joshua, you know, and, you know, choose who you will follow today. But as for me and my household, we will follow the Lord. And then there was the Psalm, which I think the Psalm that weekend was taste and see the goodness of the Lord. And then the second reading, I believe, was Ephesians 5. And it's, you know, Christ laying down his life for the church. And the gospel was Peter from Matthew saying, to whom shall we go? Like, you have the words of eternal life. Sorry, I guess that's from John probably. Anyway, it was Matthew saying those words, but it was all just around, it was all about following Christ. And then I had the experience that evening. I was giving a presentation to the NET staff and to the NET missionaries who were in their training. And it was just sharing the kerygma with them. And then they were having an adoration night, and it was all in the context of really trying to invite each one of those net missionaries to ensure that they'd had a conversion. And so the way we had worked it out is that, I was giving this presentation, and then they had their adoration night, and the priest who was there was Father John O'Brien from the Jesuits. And Father John had made this suggestion, and that staff ran with it, that he'd seen this done in other retreats where you would actually hold the monstrance kind of near the end of adoration and give every person the opportunity to come. And he would hold the monstrance just above their head. And then they could have an individual moment, literally face to face with Christ in the Eucharist. And then he read the gospel where the woman touches the tassel of Jesus's cloak and she's healed. And then he held the monstrance out, but he said the humeral veil will hang down. And I encourage you, if you want, to reach out and touch that as the woman reached out to touch the tassels of Jesus's garment, and to experience Christ's closeness in that, and him there in the person of Christ as the priest, and Christ himself there. And it was this beautiful moment. And I remember just sitting there in that night and thinking, here's what the church is really about. That each one of these people is coming face to face with Jesus, and that the priest and all the staff who had planned this night, this was an act of accompaniment, kind of en masse in a way, but then each person getting an individual moment. And because they're basically saying, how can I help you move one step closer to Christ? This is how we do it. But then it also struck me that for this moment to happen, to be physically face to face with Christ, we need the church, we need the priesthood, we need the sacraments, and all those things. And all of that together is, in the sense the church is accompanying each one of us in that journey. And the church is the way we get there. It's the quickest way to Christ. It's the only sure way to Christ is through the church. But at the same time, it was each individual person who was making their own statement, their own declaration, if you will, even like an own moment of conversion where they're saying, yes, I choose the Lord. And even in the midst of craziness happening all around them in the church, and it would be easy perhaps for somebody to feel like they should walk away. And many, many have in the midst of all this scandal, but it's always pointing people back to Jesus, and then also the recognition that really the most powerful ways to encounter Christ is through what the church offers. It's through the sacraments. It's through our ministerial priesthood, which then allows us those opportunities to meet Christ, in the most intimate way in the sacraments.
Ian, before you jump in, for those of you that are interested in learning more about conversion, jump back to the one of the first two podcast episodes that we've released on Clear and Simple, where myself and Andre, as well as some other guests, really sink our teeth into what it means to have a conversion and the three pillars necessary to ensure that you or someone else has had a deep, lasting conversion. Okay, Ian.
Yeah, good stuff. That's a good little transition because I wanted to jump back just a tad. I do this often where something that you said 10 minutes ago is something that I wanted to comment on. But that whole idea of kind of getting ourselves, when it comes to the language around accompaniment versus discipleship, when describing my relationship with somebody that I'm accompanying, somebody that I'm walking with, one of the key things there, and I could care less really, if you personally don't like, one of our listeners doesn't like the words intentional accompaniment, it's too much of a mouthful. How could something transcendent and beautiful be so clunky? Fine. That's fine, but be on guard, regardless of which words you use. If you're in a position of leadership, you're leading a ministry, you're leading simply a Bible study, and in all humility, I invite any priests who might be listening to kind of self-reflect as well, where this might be playing out for you. We can easily become a cap on how far we let the people below us progress, if that makes sense. If we see ourselves as I'm leading you, I'm not going to be able to really allow you to rise above me. I might be intimidated by somebody who's holier than me. How do I help this person? But if we take the lens of accompaniment, then I can walk with somebody who has, started from you know, barely ever darken the door of a church. I can walk with them to the point where they're baptized and they're beginning their journey, and they can go ahead and progress beyond me, and I can give them a boost now and then. I don't have to be in front all the time. They can go ahead, stand on my shoulders, take the next leap, show me how it's done, you know, in a short period of time. That happens all the time. And I think it's worth considering both in our own leadership, and maybe if we're part of a larger ministry, whether that be, you know, like a CCO or a net or whatever you might be a part of, to just consider that people, yeah, might progress beyond what we're offering, because we're not offering everything. They might need something else than what we're bringing to the table. And yeah, I mean, that's just a caution. I think it's something that's worth considering. That I, in my pride, you know, probably not intentionally in most cases, but like, just watch out for that pride that might say, you know, well, you're going into something that I don't understand, so probably you shouldn't go there, you know? Mm-hmm. But maybe that person is just growing, you know, to a new place with the Lord, and it's unfamiliar territory for me. That's fine. You know, probably look at, you want to make sure that they have the support of a spiritual director or somebody who can really help them parse through something, you know, more mystical or what have you, but don't limit people just because you feel like you're supposed to be the leader, because you think you're supposed to be in front.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, intentional accompaniment is all about relationships. I don't think anyone on the planet would describe a healthy relationship as one where you're intentionally trying to hold someone back or hold them down to your level. As with any relationship, I mean, all three of us are married. When our kids, or if our wife excels in one area far beyond what we as an individual may be capable of, the loving response is to celebrate that and encourage that and say, go for it, like, run it down. I can't help you in a big way because I have no idea what you're doing or what you're going through, but if that's leading you closer to Christ, run with it. Yeah. And ideally, that's, I think, an attitude that all of us want to have when we're accompanying someone. If they're going in a direction spiritually, like if I'm accompanying someone and they say, oh, I feel like our Lord's calling me to be a priest, as a married man, I don't want to hold them back and say, no, marriage is for you, dude. Like, so yeah, go for it. Maybe I know, like, maybe I can get you in touch with an excellent priest, or yeah, like you mentioned, a spiritual director. Hey, like, this is who I talk to, or here's someone that I think might really help you with that. Be willing to hand the reins off in some areas. It's like, yeah, you're growing. Grow beyond me. I want you to grow beyond me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's like, just speaking from personal experience in ministry, like, there's nothing better than when you see somebody who, you know, it almost seems like yesterday they were, you know, questioning whether they really wanted to start a personal prayer life and whether all that effort was worth it. And to see them, like one example from my ministry was, like, I remember one of my guys, seeing him get the call, you know, at the cathedral, the bishop was accepting his candidacy for the diaconate. It was like, just so cool. And other guys who have become, you know, just amazing husbands and fathers, just living their vocation wherever it may be. And yeah, like, I was a part of accompanying them at one point, and they've progressed to a different place. We're in different parts of the country now. They're continuing their discipleship with the Lord, you know, with or without me. Just beautiful to see.
Yeah. So both of you have years and years of experience doing missionary work with CCO. What are some of the stories that you guys have, like, experiences you've had? Could be great experiences, could be experiences which didn't necessarily turn out as you'd hoped. Yeah, what are some of the stories? And in the case of those experiences where things just didn't work, what are some of the lessons that you learned from going through that?
There's one that pops to mind right away. I think I don't know if this is my personality or if it's kind of typical, but what jumped to mind immediately was one of the times I failed. because you know, it breaks my heart to think about this guy, and I know that the Lord is still at work in his life, but in this particular situation, I think I took more of a program approach. I was like, okay, you know, do the CCO thing. We have our outreach table. The guy signs up. I do a follow-up with him, and I tried to connect with him and share the gospel a little bit. All of that was great. We actually did lay a bit of a foundation in a trusting, you know, friendship there. he was really curious and interested in what I was saying. But then I kind of lost touch with him. He didn't come out to one of our Bible studies. We kind of lost connection. And a couple of months later down the road into the semester, I was in the middle of a call, like something like this, but on campus. And he actually came up to me to just reconnect, right? And I missed that opportunity. Like, I mean, long and short of it, I was like, I'm in a meeting right now. I'll talk to you when I'm done. And I was just so the opposite of what we mean by accompaniment, so the opposite of taking off your sandals in the sacred ground of the other. It wouldn't have cost me anything to say, hang on a sec. I was talking to other missionaries, right? Like, they would have completely understood. I was like, hang on, I need to talk to this guy. He's important, right? And to communicate that to him, that was the last time I ever saw him. You know, by the time I was done with my call, he had gone back to class or I don't know what or where. And, you know, I missed an opportunity. It was the opposite of God's personal love for him. So yeah, there's one failure on my part. But it's also something that we talk about too, is just the importance of leaving the results to God. And again, this is the idea of keeping ourselves off the pedestal, because we will fail. I know that I will. And unfortunately with him, we hadn't progressed to a place where he was following Christ per se yet. So my relationship with him was pretty crucial in that time. But as soon as possible, if we can get him hooked into the Lord and realizing that I'm flawed, you're flawed, we're all flawed, but we're going towards the same master, the sooner we can do that, the better.
Yeah, boy, sometimes it's easier to find the failure stories than...
yeah, I think they stick with you more.
You know what? You talk about, like, what are some of the principles you learn? You know, I mean, we learn a lot through the times where we see either we tried to do the right thing and it didn't work, or we realize we didn't do the right thing and we learn the lesson from that. One of the stories that came to mind for me was from probably maybe my third year as a missionary, and this had this one discovery group, which, and for those that aren't familiar, it's like our first level faith study group. And I was working at University of Ottawa, and I had this group, and I don't remember now everybody who's in the group, but there were two guys in it. And I thought, like, these guys, they've got the goods. Like, these could be great leaders. I could see conversion happening in their lives. And, you know, we did all the normal things we would do in a discovery study, things that have worked 1,000 times, you know, for many people. But it's the principle of knowing that every individual person is a person, and there is no program, no matter how good the program is, that just works programmatically. You know, like, do this, you know, A plus B always equals C. Like, no, it will not be that way in any ministry context. So, you know, working with these two guys, and in particular, this was one guy, I don't even remember his name now. I mean, I'm talking, going back over a decade. I remember we had things we connected with in common, like which is always one of the great signs, right? Is that you have things you can talk about in common. We both love sport of football. He was a football guy. I was a football guy. Something we could talk about outside of all the ministry things. And he came into the faith study and he was really uncertain about things. You know, I think kind of a typical story, if I remember correctly, you know, raised Catholic, not really sure about the whole thing, but, you know, was interested, took the study, and I could see, like, lights going off or going on, I guess, as we went through the study and we got to the fifth lesson, as we do. And I can't remember now if he prayed to receive Christ at that point or not. I think he's kind of said, like, I'm almost there, but not quite. And I just had really high hopes for this guy. I could see, like, everything was lining up for him to really just click with the Lord, have a conversion, go on. And then we go through the Christmas break. It was, you know, fall going and then getting into the winter semester. And I call him up again. And I'm almost thinking this is going to be a routine. Like, you know, just call him up, be like, hey, like, ready to go for the next study? He's like, yeah, I'm not interested. And just like the the dagger in your heart, because you've been trying to pour your heart and soul into this guy. And as much as I tried other things too. I remember we shortly afterwards, we were having a Super Bowl party, and it was like, perfect. Like, this will be the perfect opportunity to get this guy connected in. It's the football connection and that. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm watching it with some other friends. Like, and I called him like weeks in advance. Like, it was, you know, it was a no go. Like, and soon after really gave up on it, because any other thing I would do, he either just wouldn't respond at all, or just, you know, was kind of brushed off. So I could see that just the interest was not there. And again, you know, and like you're saying, like, I never heard from the guy again after those attempts on my part. But that speaks to me of, you know, if we want to take it to one of the principles of intentional accompaniment, Ian, you're mentioning earlier the idea that what happens in the person's, in a sense, like inside the hourglass, what happens in their life, we have no control over. That was one of the insights that we had as we were working on developing this thought, this thinking, was that realizing that, you know, for often we would talk about in the past, what, how do we move someone forward in their relationship with Christ, as if we could do it, as if that was under our control. Mm-hmm. And that created confusion for our staff as well, because their team leader would ask them, well, how are you going to move this person forward? And then if that person didn't move the way you hope them to, you hope for them to do, then, well, whose fault was that? You know, like, in a sense, like, it became like a performance thing of like, well, should, you know, a team leader uncertain of what to do, like, do I hold this person accountable because, you know, that student they were working with didn't progress, or the staff member feeling like, did I do something wrong because this person didn't progress? Like, I was supposed to move them forward. And part of what we were really trying to refine in that thinking is understanding that we can control how we act. You know, if I use that story of this guy I was working with, like, I can control, did I make the phone calls? Did I, you know, speak to him in a contagious way? Did I, you know, look for ways to be able to connect with him personally? Did I do all those things? And I can do all those things, and somebody may not say yes. They may not respond the way I want them to. And that doesn't mean it's a failure of the missionary who's reaching out and trying to accompany. It's a recognition that each person is an individual soul who has free will and will choose to move forward or not. And that ultimately, again, Ian, you said it well, like, we have to leave the results in God's hands. Like, we do what we can do. We control, we do what is within our control, which is my own actions, my own heart, my own disposition. You know, I can use all the best tools that are available to me, but ultimately what will happen in that person's life is a function of their relationship with the Holy Spirit and their response to what the Spirit is doing. And what I'm doing is simply trying to create the environment where they can have the, you know, perhaps the greatest opportunity to be able to say yes, because I'm, in a sense, I'm tilling the soil for them. And I'm helping to create an environment where conversion can happen, or an environment where they can become a missionary disciple. But ultimately they have to choose, and we can do everything but choose for them. That's one thing that is outside of our control, is their own decisions. And then we just got to put it all back into the Lord's hands, whether it's a success, you know, we can speak to the, you know, opportunities where we've had to walk someone through their conversion moments, you know, and we can watch them grow into, you know, amazing missionaries that do more than we would ever do in our own. And we also then recognize that we shouldn't really take a lot of credit, because we also know that at the same time, we did the same thing with somebody else and nothing happened. And so really, what does that mean is that the Lord is the one who's working on their hearts, and it's about an individual who's going to say yes or say no, and is going to make their own decisions and move forward. And we just got to do everything we can to help them have a great environment to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all have the great blessing of having free will, and it's also at times, I think we all get to the point where it's like, I just wish it wasn't as free as I actually have.
The great power comes great responsibility dilemma. Yes. Again.
Yeah. Thank you, Spider-Man.
Yeah. Thank you, Spider-Man.
So many insights from superhero movies.
So we've talked a lot about the theory behind intentional accompaniment. What's the difference between an intentional accompaniment and discipleship? Shared some stories. What are some of the practical things that we could do right now to start intentionally accompanying someone else in our life? Like, Mm-hmm. For those of us who are just kind of dipping our toe in this whole evangelization thing, for others of us who have been in it for a long time, what's our takeaway? What's the plan of action?
If I was to recommend one thing, I'd recommend two. That's scriptural, right? I'm pretty sure some of the Psalms are written that way. So if I was going to recommend one thing, I'd recommend two. I think first, if we're looking for the opportunity to accompany other people in their walk in faith, I think it would be very wise to seek people to accompany us to ensure that like we are, somebody is holding us to account or helping us grow along the way. If you don't have the opportunity to have a spiritual director, somebody who's been living out the faith, and in particular in this area of evangelization, to speak with them. You know, maybe you can't meet with them regularly, but as much as you can to not go it alone, I think is huge. We talk in CCO about the Paul, Barnabas, and Timothy idea. Timothy being like somebody you might be reaching out to. Barnabas being somebody who's like a peer who can support you and encourage you and challenge you along the way. And a Paul being somebody that you're learning from and gaining wisdom and maybe getting held to account on occasion when you need it. So seek support. Seek support. Don't try to go it as a rogue solo act. We're baptized into the community of the church, and the community is important as we engage in evangelization. The second thing I would say is to ask the Lord for the ability to recognize opportunities when they come. So, like we call it prophetic listening in CCO often, just this practice of, it's also been called other things like the practice of the presence of God or seeking for God to happen in the world, like watching for those encounters with him, where you're present in your life to the opportunities that grace presents, you know, to accompany somebody, to recognize, you know, just to take that prayerful posture, Lord, help me understand where this person is at and how I can help. That posture, I think, is probably the first and most important step in being able to accompany effectively, is that posture of listening to the person and understanding where they're at, the posture of listening to the Lord then for what's the next step.
And building off that, it's a coming to a belief that God wants to work through you, because and understanding that, if you know, it's kind of like understanding our call. First, understanding that we are all called to follow Christ, and that part of that following of Christ is that we evangelize, that the Great Commission applies to each and every one of us to go forth and make disciples of all nations, and focusing on that, make disciples. That it's a process. It's not just a hope you find disciples or meet disciples, but it's make them. And that if God is asking each one of us to do that, and he has a plan for every person, which again, we can also go back to scriptures, you know, Jeremiah and all those, if God has a plan for every person and he has a plan for you to help that person move forward, then doesn't it make sense that he would let us in on the plan? And that's really what prophetic listening is about, is that God will let us in on his plans and where he intends for this person to take their next step. So trusting that to be the case, that if we go to the Lord, he will actually speak to us about people. And so I think, if there's one thing, it's prayer. It's that we talk about holiness and mission, and that evangelization is, you know, the church it says it over and over again in all its documents, all the recent documents on evangelization. The primary agent of evangelization is the Holy Spirit. He's the one who's doing the heavy lifting here. And so our job then in evangelization is first and foremost to be prayerful and to connect with the Lord and allow him to inflame our heart for people, and to let our heart be the heart of the Father. And what does the Father love most in this world is the people he's created and he's trying to draw back to him. So let our heart be one with the Father's heart, and to try and imitate the Father's heart, and then to trust that the Holy Spirit is going to take us to the places we need to go and to the people we need to go, and give us the words to say and insight that we need. The other thing I would suggest on an even more, if you want to say even more practical level, is just have relationships, have real relationships with people. Like, evangelization is about relationships. And so you need to actually have people in your life to evangelize. You can't just all of a sudden decide, I'm going to evangelize, even though I don't have close relationships with anybody. Or that all my relationships are with people who are you know, living a dynamic life with Christ. If all we do is live inside the bubble of our church and our, say, like all our churchy people and our churchy things, and the only things we need to know how to talk about are churchy stuff, then we can't relate to people who don't relate to that. We can't relate to the lost, people who are not engaging with any of that. And so we need to go. I mean, Francis again is talking a lot about going out to the peripheries, to the fringes of society and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, that can mean like the very fringes of society and to the, but it also could, I think, just mean like, just step out. Like, even if you're not going to go to the very edge, at least take one step and go out towards people that, you know, make sure that you've surrounded yourself. Yes. With, you know, as you said, like the Barnabas people who will be your peers, who will call you on, you know, and be a good support for you in your faith life, you know, and the Pauls and all that, but also you need that Timothy who, and Timothy can mean many things. Timothy's journey is very wide ranging, but one of the ways you're looking at, you need that person who doesn't know anything about the gospel. And if you want to evangelize, you have to know people to go and share with, and then just be a witness to them in their, in the way you live, but do it in an intentional way that you are trying to, elicit curiosity from them to see if you can engage in conversation about things relating to faith. Doesn't have to be necessarily that you just come out all guns a-blazing with the gospel, you know, like, hey, I just met you, but could I share this gospel with you? There are times when that makes sense, but in many of our relationships, our personal relationships, that's not going to make sense. So it's about developing relationships with people, becoming a person that is trustworthy, so that other people will trust you, and then allowing the Lord to guide you in those relationships, which is going to happen through your prayer as you're, you know, prophetically listening. And then he's going to show you what the next great step is for you in your evangelistic efforts, but also what is the next great step for the people that the Lord is going to put in front of you. And if you say that very dangerous prayer, like, Lord, give me opportunities to share the gospel, watch out, because he's going to, because that's his greatest desire. So we should pray that prayer, but then we got to be ready to respond when it comes.
Can I share a quick story on that? I think for a lot of people listening to this, you might kind of be in that spot. I think it's very common these days. Like, if you're practicing your faith, it's quite common to be in a kind of insular Catholic bubble, whether it be your parish community or the ministry through which you've kind of been growing in your faith. Those are the people you hang out with. Those are your friends. Those are people you that you'd be watching the Super Bowl with. And so, like, you might need to kind of step out a little bit. You might need to consider, like, do you have some interests that the lost, like Timothy, a secular person, might also share? Just a quick example of this. So, like, I did my degree in kinesiology, so health and fitness and all that kind of stuff is something that I really enjoy doing. In my old apartment, where my wife and I just had our first home together, you know, was there was a gym in the apartment, and so. One time I was down just in the gym and I'd been praying that dangerous prayer. Like, I was just kind of aware that there's so many people in this building that don't know Christ yet. Lord, give me opportunities to talk with them. And, but then I also had to do something practical, you know, like, I know a lot of people, a lot of us, when we're in the gym, we like to pop our tunes in, zone out, and that's kind of your Zen space. And you don't really interact with anybody. So, like, I had to make a choice to, like, okay, I'm not going to put my headphones in because I want the opportunity to talk to someone else. I want, like, if they want to say hello to me, I want to be able to respond back. And anyway, on one occasion, though, the guy, I'd seen him in the gym a couple of times, and he's just struck up a conversation around health and fitness and turned to, like, work, what do you do? And of course, being a missionary, that made for an easy transition into sharing about my faith. Turned out he was a baptized Catholic who never really considered that it might be a dynamic and interesting way to live your life. And I didn't go all hog wild sharing the gospel or anything like that. But I said simply, like, I've been living this as my full-time job for a number of years now. And from everything that I've seen, this is the most true, beautiful, and good thing out there. So I'm living my life as a faithful Catholic. And he was like, huh, you know, it planted a seed. And we continued having, you know, the odd conversation every time we were in the gym. We don't live there anymore. And I never got his phone number. So I feel like in that case, though, I think it was something where you just prayed for the opportunity, took the opportunity that was presented, and leave the results in the Lord's hands. continue to pray for Matt. If anybody listening wants to say a prayer for Matt, please do.
Yeah. I can throw one other thing in there. We can probably keep doing this where we throw in one more thing, but
thing for the next 3 hours.
Yeah, you might have to have us back for another podcast. I don't know.
yeah, we will. Problem when you get experienced missionaries and you're like, okay, what's something that could be helpful? But just in terms of that, we're talking a lot about the, you know, the planting seeds and that sort of stuff, but we have to also expect conversion to happen. And I think that can be one of it too. One of the things too, is I think often I hear this in you know, I'll go to a talk or something like that. And somebody will be talking about the evangelization and the focus will be like, make sure you're planting seeds. Cause you never know when that will come to fruition. And, you know, and a lot of people talk about, yeah, I'm seed planting, you know, using that analogy of, you know, that gardening type analogy. But if we expect people's lives to change at some point, we have to be the one who actually reaps the harvest. And a lot of people like to talk about how they plant seeds, but they don't actually expect there to ever be a harvest, or at least not one that they'll see. And I think if we're going into evangelization, we have to go in expecting conversion to happen, not because we're good at bringing about conversion in people's lives, but because we expect God to move. And we expect that that should be the normal dynamic of life, that we experience conversion to the Lord. That's why we're on this earth, is so that we can draw closer to God. Because he wants to draw closer to us, and he's always drawing closer to us. That's the first paragraph of the catechism, is God is always drawing closer to man so that we might be able to know him and love him and serve him. Yeah. So expect conversion, expect it to happen. That if you pray that prayer, like, Lord, give me an opportunity, expect that opportunity should come to fruition and that you will be there to see it. It's not going to happen in every single instance, but expect that should be part of your normal reality as somebody who's trying to evangelize, is conversion will happen around you.
Yeah. And that actually really drives your behavior. Mm-hmm. Like when you're planting seeds, right? It's very easy to just kind of throw that out there, do a mic drop and walk out. But if you look at Jesus and what he did with his apostles, I mean, the number of times he had to go back to them and they're back in their fishing boats. He's got to be like, come on, no, the mission is over here. Mm-hmm. You know, he met them where they were at again and again and again over the 3 years that he was interacting with them. And still, like, even shortly before he died, they still didn't get it. You know, it takes work. It takes effort. The Lord is calling us to labor the same way he did. And when it comes to intentional accompaniment, it means making sacrifices for these relationships. Like, if you're really going to walk with someone, it's going to demand something of you. The cost of discipleship is high, and, but it's good. It's so worth it. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to, I guess that's maybe a little bit heavy, but as an encouragement, right? You put in that work, trusting in the Lord, conversion will happen. The Lord wants it. The Lord desires that for the people in your life. And if you are expressing that openness, willingness to cooperate with his grace in all humility to help these people come to conversion. I mean, I've seen the Lord work conversion through some pretty rough material. I mean, I'm one example for sure, but you don't need to be a Tim Staples or a Patrick Coffin in order to help, or a Peter Crafe to help somebody come to conversion. Just the fact that you know people that Peter Crafe doesn't know means that the Lord is probably asking you to do something about it more than he's asking somebody more qualified.
Thanks for joining us today for our conversation on an intentional accompaniment. Keep an eye out on our blog for a post that will go into more depth on this subject, and check out our show notes for a link that will take you to a brochure on intentional accompaniment and provide you with some greater details on the subject. If you have any questions, comments, queries, quandaries, conundrums, or otherwise, please email us at podcast@cco.ca. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review us and subscribe, share us with your friends. Once again, I'm your host, Gerhard, and you're listening to the Missionary Disciple Podcast by Catholic Christian Outreach. Until next time, God bless.